Okay. Well, it's while we didn't get to talk too much about the weather, although I'm kind of envious of some of that weather in Florida. That's and Colorado for a change. That's really nice. We're going to talk today about leveraging, and we're following this path. We started. What we're doing is we're anticipating the RFP coming out, and are you online, Heather?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, we'll be with you in just a second. We started out talking about those types of things, best practices we call them, and critical issues that you can do now before the RFP comes out. And those are things that are more like foundation activities, and they include things like community assessment. You've got to be thinking about the communities that you want to work in and how they fit and what other programs are available in that community. These things take a while to do. And then once you start establishing where you want to work, we've talked about labor market assessment and seeing, are you in an employer desert? Are there going to be jobs? Can your students get to those jobs? Which goes right in with community assessment, community and labor market assessment. Is it a good community to work in? Can people get to work after they're trained? Are employers willing to work in that area? Are there other government programs which you want in there, like enterprise zones or labor programs? So first we started off with that, and then we moved into partnering, which is, of course, essential for this program. It's only $200,000, and it can take anywhere from that up to $1 million to run one of these programs. And bringing partners on board, but not just for money and resources, but for support. Sometimes your best partners are those who mention your name in City Hall, or to contractors, or to potential vendors, and to potential students. So the importance of establishing partners. Today we're going to talk about a related critical issue to partners, and that's leveraging. And there's just your partners are who leverage your program, but there are partners that are kind of supportive, and I don't want to say go along for the ride. They're with you. They're going to work with you. And then there's those partners who are bringing out their wallets or bringing out their resources, and they're contributing to their program. And this is the leveraging aspect. So we're going to talk about that today. But before we do that, and Heather, I am on recording, so I'm okay. You don't have to remind me. Okay, Heather's going to give us a roundup of the latest news from Washington and what we can expect in the next few weeks.
All right. Well, I just talked to Washington actually yesterday, and they just wanted to let us know how things were coming in terms of the release of the next RFP. So I know everybody's been anxiously awaiting some of this information. You know, it looks like it's going to lean a little bit more towards the end of this month, maybe to about the middle of next month. So that's kind of the time frame we're looking at for that RFP to be released. Again, as we hear more information, we will definitely push it out to you all either on the PLCs or through the listserv. So just keep an eye out for things and ear out for things, but we'll let you guys know as we know more. But right now, again, we're looking at the end of this month to the middle of next month as the potential release date for the RFP. And then they also wanted us to remind you guys that, again, you know, because everything's a little scurry this year with us shifting when that RFP is going to come out, just remind everybody that, once again, the RFP will go out end of this month, middle of next month, and then the funds will be released in fall of 2019, so fall of this year. So again, just kind of keep that in mind as you guys are looking forward with things, that again, we're looking at sort of a fall time frame for the funds to be released. On the HMTRI side of things, I did want to share some really awesome news with you guys as well. So the agreement that we have with the EPA involved us doing those fantastic annual all-grantee meetings that we've held out on the East Coast for the last many, many years. Our most recent grant sort of said that we were going to hold a certain number of them, and we had reached that certain number of them. But I will tell you, for those of you who has worked with GLOW in the past, she's absolutely fantastic, and she's worked really hard to find a way that we are going to be able to hold a additional meeting kind of above and beyond what we were expecting to be able to do. We're very excited to announce that. So we will be having an all-grantee meeting in 2019. We are looking probably at shifting it just a little bit later, and that's partially in response to the fact that the RFP has been delayed. Not majorly, but we are looking at more like middle of August to mid-September. So I do ask, I am going to send some information out to the listserv in the next coming weeks, asking for your input and your feedback so we can build a better meeting to make sure it's really catered towards you guys and your needs. The only thing that I ask pretty please is let's have prompt responses to some of those surveys if you're willing to input your insights into them. So hopefully, we're looking at maybe next week. We might even be throwing out some potential dates to see how that availability works for everybody and things like that. So keep an eye on your emails. You'll see some great news coming in terms of this all grantee meeting, and we're really excited to be able to offer that in 2019.
Great. As you're saying about GLOW, I would say she's stingy. And we always wanted to be able to put on this extra conference. We wanted to. So we've run a tight ship over the last several years. And so the good news is we've got enough to have an annual meeting this year. And while it's just a couple weeks later, it should be a lot of fun. So when you're looking forward, for those of you who are grantees, if you can, all you have to do is be able to get to Alexandria. Pretty much everything else is covered. The meals are covered. The housing is covered. We have snacks and lunches. If you want to go out to dinner, that's on your own. So it's basically getting to Alexandria. And it's we're talking about three nights. And then everything else is covered. For those of you who are thinking of submitting a grant, or may not be a current grantee, or maybe alumni, you're going to be invited. So everyone's invited to this conference. This conference for people who are interested in starting a program. So if you're going to submit a program, thinking of submitting a program, are a alumni grantee or a current grantee, if you can plan and whoever, maybe the resource person, kind of keep some funding to get to Alexandria. I think you'll be in for an interesting time. All of the EPA people are going to be there, assistant administrators, all the regional coordinators. We're going to have the breakout sessions, and those of you who have been to it know it's a lot of fun. All breakout sessions. The nicest thing about this conference is everyone's on the same page. We're all talking about job training, working with students, addressing underserved populations, exchanging ideas, and hearing from people who have been through the program. So if you can, plan on it, and that's what we're doing now, and we'll be sending out, through this whole process, we want as much information from those of you who have attended or would like to see something at the conference. So we'll be sending out these questionnaires. There may be some things we didn't do in the past or things you want to make sure are done. And once we start to establish on a democratized basis the sessions we're going to break out, then we'll be looking for people who are interested in participating in those breakouts. So that's pretty much what's going on in that light. It kind of leads us to another question that we had. This is a grantee who just got a grant in the last RFP, and should we really submit a proposal? Absolutely, absolutely, yes. Plan on whoever you are, non-grantee, prospective grantee, alumni grantee, current grantee, a new grantee. I would plan on submitting in this RFP that's going to be coming out within the next several weeks. And again, we'll be letting you know about that. And the reason is they're kind of migrating to these two-year cycles instead of the one. And so you want to get on record as being newly funded, even if you just got funded. and you're just starting. So I would plan on, no matter what, I would plan on submitting a proposal in this round. And as I said, all can apply. That kind of led to a secondary question that we answered last time that was basically, we're just starting out and we're competing with people who have been getting grants for the last 10 years. How do we have a chance? Should we even try? And absolutely, yes. And the reason is EPA understands this situation. In fact, if there's a bias, it's a bias for new grantees rather than people who have been there. I would say on an equal par, if you're an established grantee, you have a harder time getting re-upped than if you're a brand new grantee because some of the regional coordinators who evaluate the grants feel that we've got to let everyone come to the trough. And obviously, if we've got some excellent grantees who are doing a super job, write great proposals, have their partners and leveraging all lined up, they shouldn't be rejected. But at the same time, we've got new people that want to come to the table and get their program started. And the thinking is, well, if you've been around for a while, maybe you should have leveraged your program up by now and you should have resources available. So I would say there's an equal chance and there's certainly set aside for the new grantee. And if we look at the past, about half are new, half re-up. It's like that goes up and down from year to year, but that's about it. So definitely go into the game, stay in the game. And actually, if it's your first time, we encourage you to do it no matter what, because when you submit, you get on the mailing list of the region, you get on the radar of the EPA, and sometimes in the old days, usually it took one round to sharpen up proposals. So sometimes it helps because you get to, if you don't get the grant, you get to sit down with the regional coordinators, perhaps even at the annual meeting, which at that point they will not be able to talk to you about your grant, but you can start sharpening up whether you're accepted or rejected. You get to find out what your strong points are and what your weak points are. So all in all, make it a long story short, everyone apply. Don't have a preconceived opinion on your chances, but make it as thorough as possible. And when the RFP comes out, we're going to get into the weeds on the ranking criteria and how to actually respond to this specific questions and proposals. Right now, we're working on these more general things of how you should be, things that take time, and what you could be lining up now to write into your proposal. And of course, today we're talking about leveraging. And again, these are what resources can you bring to your program. And there's a couple of different programs. There are the Walmart programs. They have everything. You walk into a Walmart, you walk into one of these programs, they have everything. They do rehabilitation. They do drug testing. They do legal services. They provide child care, transportation, overall provides housing, temporary housing. These are the Walmart of organizations that have applied. And then we have the small businesses and the standalones. And I would say some are as successful as others. Again, as I said, new versus experienced. I wouldn't put a judgment on that it's a slam dunk for the Walmarts. I think that some of our best programs are standalone programs and have done a great job of leveraging and partnering. So the difference between these two is when you have an organization where you have everything in-house, you don't have to do much leveraging. You may have everything there, and you don't have to go out and set up partnerships. You don't have to go out and maybe develop MOUs or find out who's going to be your resources. When you're a standalone, you're going to have to do that. And how do you do that is what we want to talk about. And we want to talk about the ones that seem to give our grantees the most leverage and seem to be the most useful. And let's talk about best practices and how you may want to go about this from after this call is over. You certainly, in the first couple sessions, start talking your program up. in developing your partners and labor market assessment. You get the word out that you're applying for the proposal. Now, and I understand that I've talked about this before, there's a tendency to let's get the grant and then let's go do this stuff. You can't do it on this program. On this program, when you write your proposal next month, you're going to be writing a proposal. You're going to have these things in place if you want to write them into the proposal. And if you don't write them into the proposal, they won't know you even have them or have the ability to get them. The only thing the evaluators will know will be what you write into that proposal. So you got two choices. We do it, you start now, start lining these things up before you go into it. And as you, after that RFP goes out, you've got 60 days. You either line them up now or you're lining up then. But in either case, when you submit your proposals, you're going to, if you want to include those partners and leverage partners, you're going to have to do this research. Well, as I said, do you want to be a Walmart or a small business? And the other question there that's related to that is, what kind of program do you want? Do you want to do a bare bones environmental workforce development job training program, or do you want to do something more comprehensive? And again, I don't or would not make a judgment on which is better. Intuitively, you would think that the more services you could bring to a program, the more comprehensive it is, you would think that might be a better program, but not necessarily true. If you have a really good workforce development, job training, health and safety program, and you're placing all your students, you're focusing on a very narrow topic. You're not doing remedial training. You're not doing case work. You're not providing legal services. You're not doing any of those things. But if you do a good job in what you're doing and you're placing students, that may be good enough. On the other hand, if you're writing a proposal and you say, well, we're evaluating our students and doing assessments, and we're going to provide remediation training when people need it. We're going to provide, of course, life skills. We're going to go to the courts and provide legal assistance and drug rehab. We're going to provide transportation to our students. We're going to be a social organization. Intuitively, you might say, well, that's Wahoo. It's a fancier program. It's got all the bells and whistles. So, again, I wouldn't say one's better than the other. The one is more impressive. It's kind of like the BMW versus the Chevrolet, but it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the Chevrolet. So, and a lot of that decision will be made on what you can do. If you're in a smaller community or you just don't have the resources, you may want to go to a really good environmental workforce development and job training program, very effective. Have strategic partners, leverage when you need it, and that leveraging is that what you feel you need in your program. And when we start talking about best practices, how do you figure out what you need? And a good place to start is, okay, what does EPA cover? And essentially, EPA covers what they say. Environmental workforce development, job training on specific environmental remediation issues, how to clean up a site that's contaminated, and the courses you provide and the services you provide, focus on that and getting those people jobs. So recruitment, training, placement. And that's specifically to environmental remediation, mostly hazardous waste, solid waste, hazardous waste, underground storage tanks. There will be a list in the RFP that comes out. It varies slightly. Wastewater. It depends on the programs who are contributing this year. Air has not traditionally been in there. So the next step is, okay, what do I want to do above and beyond the Chevrolet? What do we feel is essential? And there are, you could kind of divide that into two things, things that they just won't support and we feel we need. And then there's those things that they will support, but if we could get extra help with that, we could put our resources into other things. To give you an example, and the first one that always comes to mind is the workforce investment boards. These are the one-stops. Every state has them. They get the federal grants to run them. Some are awesome and some are terrible. It goes state by state. And some will provide recruitment, assessment, sometimes health screening, placement services. Some will provide learning tools, equipment. If it's associated with the job they're training for, they might provide boots, special protective equipment. That will do everything. Some will do minimal. Some will be very bureaucratic, and they'll help in the recruitment and have brochures. They'll add environmental training to their host of jobs that they're offering. They usually, most of them will do some sort of an assessment, TABOR, or some sort of screening for GED, or variety of tests depending on what they do. So while you don't necessarily need a WIB, this is one of those organizations that they can contribute to what you're doing. They could loosen your load so you could focus on everything. And next week we'll be talking about recruitment and assessment. That is such an essential thing. It's the most important thing there is. But they might be able to supplement some of the things you're doing. So in other words, you're going to continue doing the hard work in recruitment, but they could maybe provide you with some people that go through their system. And if you're lucky, they might be able, you could qualify them for all kinds of assistance. So the WIB is definitely a leveraging resource. If we look at the best resources out there that could contribute to something that EPA would also fund, the WIB is something to look at. There are other local organizations that will give you some really good leveraging that, again, it isn't necessarily needed because EPA will cover the cost, but it will either enhance your program, make it better. That includes, for example, the Department of Health. Some departments of health will do all the fit-up physicals. If you need physicals for fit-up, a lot of them will do that. You might save $50 or $100 a participant, and they'll take care of all of that. Then you've got the groups like the DENR, the DNRs, Department of Natural Resources, or the local EPA or state EPA. They could provide equipment, facilities, training pads. They might provide fit-up suits. They can, again, it's discretionary, and it depends. When you go to them and tell them what you're planning on doing, they're going to be all excited. They're going to be a partner that could lead you down to other paths, not necessarily contributing dollars or hard resources, but they may, but they could also lead you down a path of potential partners and people who would hire your people. But there is a very definite ability for them to provide trainers, equipment, facilities, and support your programs. Then you've got a lot of other programs that are out there, like the NIHS program or the OSHA program, or the local fire department and emergency response teams. They could provide equipment, pads, fit-up suits, people, all of those things. And you might firsthand say, well, these are all covered by the grant, but if you could get these covered by someone else, they'll supplement your program rather than necessarily replace what you're doing and just make it a much more comprehensive program. Then you've got that other type of program. If you're on a speakerphone, I should have said this at the beginning, always try to be quiet or put us on hold. Silence. Put us on silence, not on hold, because sometimes we get hold music. Then there's those programs that EPA doesn't cover. You feel you really need them. The people you're servicing need them, and you've got to get leverage. And you've got to prioritize how important it is to get those programs. These things are I've talked about, life skills, remedial training, case management, transportation of your students to and from the program, perhaps even to and from a job once they get it, legal assistance, child care, rehab services, student support, stipends. And that's the next level. If you want to expand from the Chevy to the Toyota, perhaps, and add more bells and whistles to your program, where do you go for these? And certainly, if you go to your local community college, if you're talking about remedial education, this is probably the place to go. There are also nonprofits that provide this service, but things like financial management, presentation skills, anger management, you may want to touch base with that community college and see what, don't go to the credit program, go to the business and industry program of a community college and talk to them about how they may partner with you and be a leverage partner. When we start talking about case management, many of you automatically, your organizations are familiar with HHS and the services they provide. They people that come to you in the underserved populations may come through HHS or some sort of aid, local or state aid program, and they may already have a case manager assigned to them. That also kind of ties into legal assistance, whether it's HHS or faith-based organizations or legal aid, they would provide legal assistance to your participants, mostly in things like traffic, expunging some criminal records. It depends on the state you live in and what their attitude towards special programs and ex-offenders is. If you find that you could add transportation of your students, you might want to talk to Uber, for example, the local Uber manager. They're providing, in some cases, transportation to and from classes while someone is in a program. This is very local, and you have to work this out on a local basis. The local DOT or the bus service, we've even have auto dealers who have worked with programs. So you may want to talk to particularly a transportation like DOT. Part of the deciding where you're going to have your program and where you're going to train has to do with getting your students to and from. And we always recommend that you be on a bus route where people could get to the program. If you're on a bus route, there's a very good chance you can make a deal with the bus services to give them either free or reduced fees to get to class. So it's a definite perk and something as far as a leverage partner you can use. Of course, we talked about legal aid, HHS, and faith-based organizations, which become very important when we start talking about things like child care. Don't feel you have to be a big organized organization to get excellent leveraging. Faith-based organizations in a community, once the people realize that it's a positive and you're giving local residents good jobs, they have child care services. That also was more organized under HHS programs. In terms of rehab, if you want to provide rehab services, you may need to go to some sort of the Health and Human Services. But don't forget the nonprofits, our Fortune Society or Uberil. These are organizations that provide rehab services. And how do we find those organizations? Well, let's go to Google. Rehab services in Richmond, Virginia, or child care services in Richmond, Virginia, or legal aid services in Richmond, Virginia, or wherever you're at. Just Google it and try to find the nonprofits that are out there and the governmental organizations that are out there that you can go to leverage. Don't forget the vendors and contractors. And there's a group of people who could provide money. They could provide financial resources. That includes, of course, some foundations, philanthropic organizations. It includes some governmental organizations and some legislative organizations. For example, fines and penalties. A very few people have done it, but when they do it, it's unbelievable. You go to the Attorney General's office, all environmental fines and penalties go somewhere. And that's up to the legislature and the Attorney General's office. There's a pile of money that can go from hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to millions and millions of dollars. Case in point, Valdez, Alaska, multi-million dollars. Katrina, you go down to the Mobil oil platform, millions and millions of dollars. The easy swipe on that is, an easy one is, let's go to environmental education. Okay, well, what is environmental education? So how do you get on that list? And that's the question you want to ask. And we've seen it done in several areas. And once you get on one of those lists, you almost don't need EPA anymore. You're launched. You've got financial resources. And what will happen is all the fines and penalties come in, and they're divided up using some formula to all of those organizations. And there are two lists you really want to get on if you can. Fines and penalties, and get written into the legislation. It's amazing how many nonprofits are funded by legislation every year. And that's more difficult because you've got to get into the political system and you've got to get your name on the list of the organizations that they're funding. But they do. And here in North Carolina, I believe that list is in the thousands. It's a huge number of nonprofits that are supported by the legislature. Of course, this is the best kind of leveraging. It takes time to get on these lists, but you never say never. If you don't try it, it won't happen. But if you go, and how do you start? You go to the Attorney General's office, and you explain to them what you're doing, and is it possible to get onto fines and penalties? And then once you become more seasoned with legislature, to the extent you could work your way into some sort of state funding. And, of course, that's exactly what happened in New Jersey. So that definitely is something you want to consider. So how do we do this? And I've said an awful lot, but it's easy to say and hard to do. And again, this is one of those things you can start lining up now. And it's basically search and then seek out. And in your organization, if you've got the luxury of having someone who could become a development officer, that's the best way to go. Have someone this is what their job is. And more sophisticated organizations are able to do this. They have a development officer. They're doing everything I just said. They're just scanning potential philanthropic organizations, nonprofits, social organizations, and government organizations, and saying, this is what we do, and how do we do it with you? Can you help us? And in what way can you help us? And those who are positive, you go to the next level, and you say, can we organize some sort of memorandum of understanding, particularly for those who are bigger than others? Some you'll know, they just do it and they decide, well, yes, we want to partner with you. If you need a letter from us, that's fine. That's the best thing to do because if you want to include this in your evaluation criteria, you want to make sure it's locked in. So you can't just say, well, we're planning on getting money from local churches and faith-based organizations, or the Legal Aid Society said they could help us out. You can't, that doesn't really hack it, or HHS will support. You really need to try to get some sort of documentation, and once you have that, then as we go through later on in responding to this grant, you could start including these leveraged partners and what they're going to bring to the table. So that's a quick overview of how you can go about getting these leverage partners. Is there anyone out there? We found that there's always new people that come up, banks. I think in California, the one that was great was the utility companies. Because they have monopoly, they were expected to support local nonprofits and in local nonprofit environmental training program is an excellent source, so they can backstop the program. So in Boston, tremendous philanthropic support when Jobs for Youth was involved in that. We've have seen fines and penalties, municipal organizations, local government organizations helping out in all sorts of ways. So anyone out there that has found something that they found that really works for them in terms of ramping up their program, whether it be financial or in-kind contributions? Anything particularly helpful? This is it's a difficult subject because you really have to be outgoing and start asking for money and services. It is a challenge.
I could talk about how our program is lazy.
Good.
This is Michael with Los Angeles Conservation Corps. We're a large organization, so we have our own department delivering supportive services to all of our program participants. So we already have a built-in component that provides leverage, which the federal agency will recognize as leverage. It's not a required match, right? I forgot.
No, but there is no match on this grant, which is
yeah,
great.
So our supportive services that we ourselves deliver counts as our leverage, which helps with the scoring. And then we have some other leverage that comes in from program partners and other services. But the bulk of our leverage number comes from the services we ourselves provide.
That's certainly the easiest. And it's not lazy. It's just you have a Walmart going on there. You've got resources. I can't say that those don't influence the evaluators because you're bringing tremendous leverage. Again, those of you who may not have all of those or may have some of them, you may have to seek out. You may have a few things you could offer, and you may have an NIHS program that you could bring resources from one and synergistic. You may have a Jobs for Youth or a Conservation Corps, or you might have a Youth Build. And of course, we talked about partnering with these. There is a little difference between partnering with them and getting commitments from them. And it's okay to partner with them. You need to do that. In fact, they want to see your partners. But the next level up from there, that's the real money level, is this is what they're going to bring to the program. These are the courses they're going to teach. This is the experience they bring. These are the facilities that they're going to provide. And that's what we're looking for when we start talking about leveraging. And so, you know, first get your partners and then drill down to, okay, now let's talk specifically about what we need and what you may be able to provide. And I wouldn't be timid in thinking, well, then why are they going to give out stuff to us? The fact is that they have to, because their reason for being is to support the community. And there's a little bit of this double counting going on where you're leveraging, but they're providing services. So you could be sure that in their progress reports, they're talking about the people they're helping. And it's okay that it's under your grant, but they're serving, you're bringing basically people that they're underserved populations and presenting them to them, and they're providing them with maybe specific training, or they're providing them with health screening, or they're providing with web services. So when they count their numbers, they're not totally altruistic. You're bringing to them an audience to justify their reason for being. So again, I wouldn't be timid in saying, can you help us and how can you help us? And you have to be sure this is the population we're serving. And we understand you're serving the same population. So we can both benefit from this partnership that we've got. So, any thoughts from anyone? We're going to, next week, we're going to be talking about this is pretty much what we've been talking about, building this foundation of partners, leveraging communities. Now we're going to start moving more towards the evaluation and what the operational side of this program. And of course, when we talk about that, the most important thing is it's the old story, data in, data out, good people in, good people out. And it'll be it's one of the major critical issues. So we'll be doing that next. And we may even be announcing the RFP as out. So we'll see, but everyone is on the list. They're going to go to post-session notes and any announcements that we get. So with that, I hope you all have a good day. And any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.